Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's April 22nd, 2014. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We have a special show today. We're celebrating New York Agriculture and Beer, the New York Ag and Beer Show. It sounds like it could be at the Javits Center, and it might be one day. But right now, we just got this great lineup of people dealing with agriculture and beer in New York. Everybody just go around the room and introduce yourself. We got a hop grower from Dutchess County.
Yeah, how you doing? Justin Riccobono from Dutchess Hops.
All right. And someone involved with NRDC who's involved with ag and water.
Exactly, Jennifer Grossman. Thanks.
Great. And our newly elected president of the New York City Brewers Guild, our good buddy.
Kelly Taylor from Kelso Beer Company.
All right. And the woman that helped push New York Grains forward so that we could make over 15 different breweries use beer for New York City Brewers Choice, June Russell herself.
From Grow NYC and a regional grains project.
All right. And a special guest who's here checking out what we do so he can learn to do more in New York State, the guy from New York State Brewers Association.
Yes. Hey, great to be here. I love this.
Paul Leone. Let's start with you. So you're the new executive director of the New York State Brewers Association. I know that's a new position. Tell us a little bit about the New York State Brewers Association because it kind of ties into all that we've been doing, what Governor Cuomo has been pushing, and special projects with getting farmers to grow hops and grains for beer.
New York State Brewers Association is about 11 years old now. It was co-founded by David Katleski, who is our president of our board of directors. And primarily over the last 10 years has really been focused on legislative issues and advancing beer in this state. So your show, this particular show, is really a great subject because, you know, one of the most recent bills that have been put through is the Farm Brewing License, which is now a little over a year old, year and a half old, and there are 32 plus farm breweries, which I'm sure you'll get into. So, we're really the New York State Brewers Association has really been about legislative issues. They hired me as the first executive director in July of last year, and so now we're shifting more towards marketing New York beer as a brand, but also supporting things legislatively.
So I was at the governor's. It was the New York Beer, Wine, Cider, Spirit Summit in Albany 2 weeks ago. It's pretty awesome. I mean, you guys have so much has happened in the last 2 years.
We have an incredible governor and administration right now that totally gets that, if you support this industry, which has a huge economic impact on so many levels, that good things happen. You know, it creates jobs, especially with the farm brewing license. And I'll go back to that. You know, it creates other industries and it's a growing industry. So we are really, really lucky to have this administration right now. And they've been very friendly to us. And wine has had it really good for a long time. And they still have they do a great job. But it's beer's turn.
Well, when you think about beer, you know, it's a big industry. There's jobs, people are doing festivals. We'll talk about Fiberborough Fest and New York Tap Fest later in the show. And it's bar owners. But when I read Steve Hindy's book, we were lucky had him on last week, his new book, Craft Beer Revolution. He was talking about, you know, the industry of beer includes guys that make cans and glassware and distributors. And on one level, you know, beer gives a lot of jobs. But within New York State, like New York State's a real big agricultural state, you know, and we forget we're in New York City. But when you go upstate, there's great traditions of cattle and dairy and, you know, and there used to be hops. So why don't you guys weigh in a little bit about what's going on in terms of other jobs and industries that are impacted by the growth of New York beer, like grain and hops?
Sure. Well, at Grow NYC and Green Market, we've been working to try to get local grains in production for quite a while now. I think I started the conversation or joined the conversation about 2007. And originally that was working with bakers trying to see if we could find local flour. But in order to bring grain back to the region, we really need everybody, like all possible buyers. So in 2009, we really brainstormed about what are all the grains we could be growing that would give our farmers viable products that they could produce on their farms, and what would those culinary applications be? And of course, beer would be one of them. But then the great barrier there was malting facilities. So as we've scaled up grain production, having Valley Malt in particular come online in 2010 has really opened up that gateway, and it's still very small. It's like a drop in the bucket. But where we are in terms of production, it's helped in introducing locally grown grains to the beer-making community, I guess.
So you guys at Grow NYC, you know, since then you've participated in a couple programs where you've had brewers directly make beer from New York grains.
Sure. I mean, we've worked with bakers, we've worked with the distilleries, and, you know, certainly feed grains are starting to enter the conversation as more people are having concerns about GMO production. But, you know, we think of it in terms of, like, what's our agricultural system in the Northeast. And so it's not just one thing. You can't just grow wheat to go into flour and make bread, because you're going to have all kinds of weather conditions. You're going to have different quality parameters. So farmers really need multiple markets to sell into and, you know, to be able to make their bottom line at the end of the day. And they can't rely on just one outlet for that. So having brewers at the table is huge. And you guys, I'm sure, all know that, especially because everyone's looking for barley. And barley production is probably about 4 years behind the work we've been doing with our growers who've been working on wheat. But it'll get there. It gets there pretty quickly. It seems like there's a shortage, but in a few years it'll seem like it happened really fast.
Kelly? Hi, buddy.
Hi.
Mr. President of New York City Brewers Guild.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So you worked on the Grains Project a little bit. We did the New York City Brewers Choice.
Right, we did the Brewers Choice. And we've been really trying to get local grains for many years. And as June pointed out, one of the early obstacles was, first of all, getting it malted. In the malting process, the maltster makes the grain usable, really, for a brewery, not just in the fact that they're malting it, but just getting rid of a lot of the husk and getting a lot of the material you don't want to have necessarily get into your finished product. So, you know, I used to get, Bob Lewis used to get me a bunch of grains, and, hey, look, you come down with this bag of sample grains. Hey, look, I got a whole bunch of this in my farm. It was like spelt, and it was just basically all husk. Don Lewis, I'm sorry, yeah. it was one of the Lewises involved. Yeah, it was Don. It was the crazy farmer, not the crazy...
Ag and Markets
guy. It takes some crazy guy named Bob to really drive this whole program forward.
And one of our founders, by the way.
Yeah.
So, June, who are some of the farmers that are growing beer that can be used for grain? I know there are a few of them at New York City Brewers Choice.
But. Oh, sure. Well, Tor Oshner was there, and he's been working with us for a number of years. And then there's the Martins, both Klaus Martin and Peter Martins from Lakeview Organic Grains. And, you know, we're seeing, like, more farmers trying to get into it. There's a big learning curve. And I know that in this last push at the meeting a couple weeks ago, they're looking at technical assistance for growers to get more folks into production of barley in particular.
You know what? The beer we're drinking right now, it's the Bell's Too Hard Ale. And I know that Bell's in Michigan, for a long time, he has been growing some barley, and he supported a neighboring farmer and bought the land, but he's one of the early guys to get behind it. So that's what we're drinking right now, Bell's Too Hard IPA. It's pretty good, right?
Yeah. Pretty good.
It just takes a few people to get started, right? Is that what you're saying?
Sure, but it really takes the market. It takes the market. Like, you know, Kelly's been amazing in what he's worked with and been willing to work with, and you know, we've gone through this process with our bakers, who are really used to working with commodity products, and they're used to it being at a lower price point, and it comes from the commodity system. So, you know, it's sort of surprising when you see, like, the price point of what a local malt is going to cost you. But, you know,
it's about three times the price.
Yeah.
It is. It's about three times the price. I mean, it's not doesn't make the beer three times the price, but it's going to make the beer more expensive to sell. And the reason that I've been very successful at it is because there's a market. People love to drink beers that are made with local grains. And people love to eat food that is made with local with local source materials. I mean, that's not a big shocker. And the reason for that is it's interesting, it's complex, it's got diversity, it's something that you're not going to be able to get across the country or around the world. You're not going to be able to get this beer made with this grain anywhere else in the world. It's only going to be made right here. So, and people are willing to pay a little bit more for that. So it's a very, very simple thing for us to be able to make these products and get them to market on a small scale. I mean, we're still talking about, you know, 15-barrel batches, which is relatively small in the world of breweries. But as long as, you know, people are willing to drink it, I'm willing to, you know, to make it and you know, drive the business that direction. It's been very fortunate.
And I'd like to add that, you know, the millennials are our largest growing demographic in craft beer, and they really care about where their food comes from and who's making their beer and all of that. So that really helps with all
of this.
Is
that a TV show, The Millennials?
No, <it's fine. laughs> yeah. It should be. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, The Millennials.
So
yeah.
that's what you...
It's an HBO
you're
special.
Like, so you're like the trade association, right? New York State Brewers Association.
That's right. Yeah, we represent all the craft breweries in New York State. Right now there's 152 of us. You know, there were 32 farm breweries as of last week. There are probably 34 now. You know, I mean, it's just a huge industry that's growing. I mean, New York State is third in the country right now, economic impact with $2.2 billion for craft beer.
Wow. How much beer do you sell, Kelly? I mean, you're part of one of the most successful breweries in New York City, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, we're selling about, for the Kelso side, we're selling about 1,000 kegs a month. It's about 12,000 kegs a year. So just about 6,000 barrels of beer a year, which is really, really small as a general rule for the brewing world. A lot of people are doing millions of barrels. But one of the nice things about doing it on this scale is I'm able to go directly to the source and get hops and from upstate and, you know, oh, we have 20 pounds of hop left. Perfect. That works for me. I can get 20 pounds of this. And Andrea's Valley Malt, their batch size is about a ton, which is coincidentally about a batch size for me too. So it's like, okay, send me a ton of grain and I'll make a beer out of it. And it really works at that scale. I'm kind of talking about the same scales that the farmers can grow and the maltster can produce. So it makes it easy for me, which is important.
Yeah.
And then I'm not doing little sample pilot batches of the stuff. This is something that I can actually bring to market, which is important. You have to be able to make a commercially viable product that people are going to enjoy and do it again and again and again in order to make a successful program. We're not talking about just doing a single batch of something or other. We're talking about a successful kind of ongoing program and people that are happy to do beer festivals based around it or magazine articles. I'm working with Edible Magazine doing quarterly brews for them with all locally sourced materials. This next batch that we're going to be doing in May is a rhubarb goza with farmer's market rhubarb, probably in the fermenter because it's not going to be ready, right, June? When's the rhubarb ready?
Well, it's been a very cold spring. So
yeah, we need the rhubarb yesterday, June.
Yeah. I'm supposed to do it. Can I pull up?
Somebody want to talk to somebody about this? We need this rhubarb
next
now.
Next Monday I'm doing a sour beer dinner, and I said I'd have a strawberry rhubarb cobbler. Will that happen?
No.
Not yet.
No.
Back to apples. Yeah. So we got Justin and Jen. Justin, you weigh in on this. You know, you're growing hops, but you know about grains too. So tell us about what you know about grains.
Well, you know, hops, you know, everyone talks about hops and there's not enough hops out there in New York State. Hops for what's that? There's more and more breweries opening up day by day. But, what I hear more about is the grains and that there's a lack of grains. I believe last year there was a very large amount of grains that rotted out across the state. So it's not good for human consumption. So, you know, I know Cornell's working on a program to try to figure out a variety of two-row that they can grow that can be susceptible to rot a little bit better than some traditional grains. So it's I think we're kind of getting there, and I find that to be a very integral and important part of brewing throughout the state and, you know, for farm breweries.
So you've kind of addressed that through your regional grains project, though. Like, you're looking for, what, these heritage grains that are...
Yeah.
Like, ancient grains, right? Weird, like Emmer and... There's some weird names you told me, but I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, June's a big fan of Emmer.
I mean, spelt. Yeah.
That Emmer beer was delicious. Come on. June loved it. We had People's Pie. Let's
look at
beer.
The list. For the event for New York City Beer Week, why don't you and Kelly tell us about some of the beers that you like? Because there are Well, many brewers that, like yours was edible ale. What grains did you use in the edible ale from Kelso?
Well, the grains we used for the edible ale, we used triticale from Andrea.
That's the one that June loves too.
Yeah, it's a wonderful grain, and Andrea grows it. So the maltster is actually growing that grain directly. Usually the maltsters get the grains from other fields and malt it on their own, but this is something that she's actually growing. And it was a grain that I discovered through working with Andrea. I'd never heard of triticale before. It's one of the oldest grains in the world.
I feel like we're talking about pasta. This Emmer pasta, this triticale.
It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of the same idea, just a little bit more water and fermented. You know, it's kind of a snappier pasta.
So beer's liquid pasta.
It depends. With hops and alcohol.
Well, the reason it's funny, and tell us a couple of the other grains that were used.
Well, I mean, I was psyched to see somebody use it. It was Grim Artisanal that made a spelt saison, and that was exciting because that's been one of the heritage or the ancient wheats that we've been growing out and trying to promote in the region along with Emmer. And then also the Danko Rye that White Birch did was a delicious beer. It was super dark, but it wasn't the same as like if you're going to have a Guinness. It was like Simo's rye bread, but in beer form, you know, that's Nordic Breads. He does that really intense, flat rye bread. And so I was excited to see those two. And, you know, I think just to see breweries like Six Point and Omegang and Captain Lawrence like start working with local grains across the board was like it was the first time that they had ventured into that. And there's again we like hit the learning curve. They're like, what is this? We're not used to this. It's not like the commodity stuff we've been getting. But they did work with it and they made beautiful beers, and so that puts us all like a lot forward.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting, you know, I got some grain from Andrea for this project, and she sent it down. I said I wanted a pale ale, and she sent it down, and she looked at it, and she actually gets analyses done of her grain, which is very rare for a small malt house. Really, it's hard to get.
They're serious.
They're serious.
They're not messing
around. So, but she got the analysis after she sent the grain, and she got it. She called me. She goes, "Well, this is actually more like a Munich malt, which is a little bit darker, a little bit nuttier, and not quite what I was." I was like, "Well, okay, I can use it, but thanks, you know, I'm glad that I didn't put it in the beer yet, because that would have made the beer kind of go a different direction, which ultimately is okay, you know, in this kind of scale. You know, if I'm trying to do my Pilsner and replicate it every single time, that's a different program, but when I'm doing
who wants that?
Was it the Pilsner? A lot of people, evidently.
I know
Jimmy.
That. It's not craft, but
you should put it on tap at your place at some point.
I love it, and I got some things going on. But hey, listen, let's take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
All right.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a comprehensive website aimed at bringing the beer community together. And again, if you read Steve Hindy's Craft Beer Revolution, there's a great chapter about Jerry Sheehan, who's pretty much the founder of GreatBrewers.com, L. Knife & Company, really was one of the guys that jumped over from just distributing Anheuser-Busch to really adopting the craft beer portfolio. And there's a lot of great stories. We're pushing Steve Hindy's book all month, Craft Beer Revolution. It teaches you a lot about how we got from where they started to where we are today. And on that note, we've got maltster, hopsters, NRDC, all these crazy people here. NRDC, what the hell is that, Jen?
Oh,
you have something
gosh.
To do with beer. You brought us together last year. You did an event with Kelly Taylor and June Russell, and that's actually why we all got together and did this regional grains project. So what is NRDC doing with beer?
All right. Well, NRDC is Natural Resources Defense Council, and it's a national, actually international, environmental group that has worked under different umbrellas, public health, natural resources, energy efficiency. And what's going on now is so exciting because in New York, particularly, both with this legislative effort supported very significantly by the administration to support local growers on all ends of the spectrum, what we're seeing now is an opportunity to realize how important our water is. As we all know, right, water is the number one ingredient in beer. But if you really look at water, what's going on in the world, 97.5% of water in this on this earth is salt water, which means 2.5% is fresh. Of the 2.5% of fresh water, 2/3 of that is in ice. It's glaciers. So we've got a
not for long, though.
Well, exactly. So maybe climate change might be, I dare say, a positive thing, which it is not in
any
way.
Don't quote
I will
on
not
that.
Say that. But the point is that we have a very limited amount of fresh water. And what brewers do in combination with growers in a regional sense, again, the seasonality is amazing. We don't want consistent beer every single month or week or year. We want to know that we're working with the natural system, and that's what the joy is, the shift of flavors. So we're dealing with 1/3 of 2.5% of fresh water to deal with everything, whether it's watering our gardens, washing our cars, washing the sidewalks in New York City, which is probably
Jen, do you like
crazy.
Beer?
I love beer.
What do you think of Kelly's beer?
Kelly's beer is amazing. I mean, because it's flavorful and it's connected. I mean, Andrea and Christian Stanley, what they do with, Valley Malt is incredible. We need to replicate more of that. So what NRDC wants to do is allow folks to replicate and to grow. And we need folks like Justin right here, who's growing on a scale which is appropriate for what we're doing now. And hopefully you'll encourage other people, right, in your community to do exactly
like,
what
I guess
you're
we
doing.
Should talk about hops, too.
Sure. Yeah, let's do that.
Right, so, about hops.
I saw your little bio thing. It's like Justin Riccobono. I looked at a video with you with Charles Schumer, the senator.
Sure.
And you were staying there with a little suit on. And all the whole time they made you hold a little – in a little bowl of hops.
That was my
And
role.
You were like the hops guy. And I was like, I know that's Justin. So I know he's coming on the show, but it's like, so you just stood the whole time and just held your hops, right?
Well, it was very interesting. We came up with a concept at Dutchess Hops to really bring back, hop growing in the Hudson Valley, which is really, we're kind of midway between Albany and New York City. So we figured Hudson Valley is one of the best growing conditions in the world. And why wasn't hops growing here? And we wanted to bring it back. The craft beer revolution's been taken over. 10 years ago, we had maybe 5 breweries in the Hudson Valley. Now we're closing in at about 20. So we're very excited. The brewers are very excited to get a local product. We have a very local farm fresh movement going on. And one of the things we really wanted to get going is to bring back a high quality product. We've partnered with a couple of other agencies and universities. The culinary is actually working with us to work on some food varieties of hops and bringing them in.
How did you get started, Justin? So we're jumping to hops from grains. So
sure.
Do you own a farm?
Actually, I'm a farm director for a farm. The owner is Carmine Istvan. He actually bought this place about 2 years ago. And I'm a horticulturist, so I figured, hey, I'd love to run a garden center, nursery. And we had like 6 acres in the back, and I asked him what he wanted to do, and he said, I don't know, I want to do something different, something to make a destination. And I said, what about growing hops? It's starting to happen right now, breweries are happening here in the Hudson Valley. And he said, really? Give me some more information. So we talked about it a little bit, and then the farm brewery bill passed in June of 2012, and we're like, we're in.
So what else does growing. The farm grow besides hops?
We have a full-scale garden center and nursery, so we do trees, shrubs, annuals and perennials, mulch, and all that stuff.
Do you do rhubarb?
Well, we do have some rhubarb.
I need some rhubarb.
So really, yeah. anybody with a mind and a little bit of money could grow hops. Is hops easier to grow than grains?
No.
I
would say it's not. Grains, I think both of them have their own challenges. Hops... we don't have the large scale equipment that's been out there for these large growers. Typically in the past, hops have been grown by large farms, 1,000 plus acres. But we're kind of going back to the old school. In Europe, you know, there was a lot of small farms, you know, small farms that would manage hops, but everything was hand-picked. You can't really hand-pick things, so we have to bring everything down to a much smaller scale. So we have to, we're in the process, and we've actually developed and fabricated small hop harvesting equipment, drying equipment facilities, so we can actually dry and manage our hops without having to spend, you know, $250,000 on a hop harvester, which would be for the larger type of operation.
Did it ever get through? Can I have a question? Did it ever get through Albany to buy some of the larger equipment and let the small growers share it? I know that was on the table at one point.
Yeah, we all talked about it a little bit, and as everything evolved and we kind of figured it out, you know, once you cut that life cycle of that hop plant, you got about 24 hours to get that hop in the dryer and dried out and packaged before it really starts spoiling. I mean, oxidation can destroy hops. Sitting out, it'll start getting moldy. So you really need to process it very rapidly. What we're doing at Dutchess Hops is we're actually going to start processing and pelletizing, packaging hops for other farms. We've helped four other farms get started in the hop processing and growing. It's been very exciting because
so they'll bring them over to you.
They'll bring them to us. We'll pelletize them. They'll dry them. They'll harvest them and dry them. We'll pelletize them, package them, and get them out to market.
Jen wanted to jump in like three times.
Yeah, no. But what's so exciting about this is both the legislative support we're seeing from Albany in this administration and the craft brewers that are growing with integrity and uniqueness is allowing traditional farmers, whether they're livestock farmers, dairy farmers, or produce farmers, to add a few acres of hops or barley into their mix because they already have what you call a virtuous cycle. They've got their animals that provide fertilizer. They can rotate in terms of grazing. And all of a sudden, they've got a capacity to generate an ingredient that is desired and adds this supplemental secondary income. So it's allowing our farmers in New York State to retain their viability in a state that has seen 26,000 acres a year lost of farmland.
Brilliant. Let's ask, so June, who actually inspects farms and all this stuff, you guys focus on the grain farmers. Do you guys have anything to do with hop farmers as well?
We haven't very much. We haven't had any grain hop farmers in the green market system. And I know that most of my work has been with grain producers. And so my take has always been, you know, with local beer, you know, hops is like the rosemary and the beef stew. We could talk about the rosemary or we could talk about the beef. So, you know, the bulk of your product, you know, hops are, and that's a thing that's really, there's been a lot of enthusiasm to claim that a beer is local because it has local hops. But really, if we're talking like deep, significant change in a local food system, it's really about bringing grains into production and getting that into use.
And you know what's great?
No judgment towards hops. Like, it's definitely a great ingredient. And
hops are sexy.
They definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I mean, you can make eye pillows and wreaths out of them,
yeah.
Too.
Sure.
I'm going to snuggle up to June here because we're sharing a mic.
Correct me
if I'm wrong, but the way I understand it.
That was a chuckle. That was, hey, hop pillows and what?
And wreaths.
This is traditional hop craft.
Yeah.
Dude, we should do more of that stuff.
Yeah, totally. That's what I'm saying.
I know. Come on. We need a hop pillow festival.
You have a whole hop booth at the markets. You know, just like with the reeds.
Sir, have you been drinking? No, I've been sleeping, actually. And yeah. Really, the hops is in my
pillow. Sedative?
So explain that. Right, exactly. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I understand
we're getting giddy on hops.
The challenge with grains right now and getting farmers to grow barley is the fact that it's an uninsured crop. Currently, and that's correct. Is that the way
which
you
one's uninsured?
Barley. Barley is an uninsured crop, so it's hard to get a farmer to convince them to, you know, okay, don't grow corn, which they know with how much they're going to make on corn, they know how much they're going to make on, you know, all the other crops that they're growing out through the year. Why should I take a chance on barley if it's going to fail? And it's incredibly difficult to grow in our climate. It's a lot harder than I thought. And even if you do grow it, it still has to be of the quality to brew beer. Now, there's a secondary market with the distillers. They don't need quite the quality that we do, that the brewers need. So there's a lot of challenges, a lot of layers going on here.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you get started in this? I mean, you came in as an executive director, but what did you do before this?
I was a TV guy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I started out at the Baseball Hall of Fame as a producer, worked in baseball and beer, so I've had two great careers. And, yeah, I did shows for Home and Garden Television, Spike TV, History Channel. But I've been pitching beer TV shows for 10 years to the networks.
And did any of them click?
I have a good one.
Well, the funny
thing is,
the first TV show I pitched was in 2003, and I was looking for a host. And I was trying to find somebody who's a brewer. And I read about this guy in 2003 who rode a six-pack of beer across a river from Delaware to Pennsylvania. And I said, this guy's got personality. I'm going to call him. So I called him. And I said, hey, look, I've got this TV show called Beer America, and I want a host. And he said, well, good, I want to do TV. So I met him, and it turned out to be Sam Calagione. So Sam and I shot two pilots together in 2003, Dogfish Head in 2004. So the first two were with him. And then I kept my TV career going and worked in advertising for a while. And then I shot two more pilots with Warren Miller Entertainment out of Colorado, one with Oscar Blues and one with Avery. And none of them got picked up, unfortunately. But you know, there's a lot of beer TV shows getting pitched. But I guess to answer your question, how I got into this, executive directors are cut from two cloths. Either lobbyists or lawyers background, or they're advertising marketing guys. And I'm following the advertising marketing guys. David Katleski was really the lobbyist guy in our association. So I'm like everybody in this room, I'm a fan of beer, and that's how I got into it. It just happened to be.
Cheers, man. It's so great to meet you and have you on.
Oh my gosh, it's so good to meet you in person. We've been trading emails forever, so it's this is great.
Oh jeez, so this is the New York Ag and Beer and Everything show, and we'll be talking about festivals and a lot of things at Little Later Than Show. So hey, let's take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, we're here at the Beer Sessions Radio at Roberta's in Bushwick on heritageradionetwork.org. If you're not a member, you really should check it out, whether you're in Germany, England, Michigan, San Diego, Texas, Florida, where our many listeners are. It's a good idea to join up. There's student rates. It's fairly affordable, and there's a lot of benefits, especially if you like coming to New York. I know a lot of listeners like to know what are the good bars and restaurants to go to New York City. Well, now we're going to talk about some of the festivals, because beer festivals in New York have really become the thing. And we've got New York City Beer Week. We've got Queens Beer Week. We've got a lot of things going on in New York State. So first, we have some new guests on. They just came in. Guys, come up to the mic. There's a festival this weekend called Five Borough Fest. By the time many of you hear this, it might have been over. But guys, just introduce yourself and tell us briefly. How did you guys come up with Five Borough Fest? And I know it's part of Queens Beer Week, which is kind of fun.
We came up with it at the end of 2013. We were sitting in a bar in Queens.
What's your name? Say your name.
Mike Ryan with the Five Borough.
They're good. They showed up at Jimmy's number 43 with like 100 cards, and they said, we have the Five Borough Fest. So you're on the show tonight.
Well, our background is marketing. I'm originally from Huntington Beach, California, so we do a lot of surf contests on the West Coast. And we came to the East Coast. We're moving to Long Island City, Queens. We were at Big Alice, and we were having a beer on a Friday night, and we were talking to the brewery, and we found out that they had a real tough time letting people know about craft beer and local craft beer, and we found out about seven or eight breweries were about to be launched in Queens, and it made it exciting, and so we could put New York City, New York State, and craft beers together and make it something that we can enjoy.
So you're kind of carpetbaggers.
Absolutely.
We love that.
Absolutely.
We've seen a lot more people, music and concert promoters getting, like the guys that used to produce the Dave Matthews concerts are now the New York City Craft Beer Festival guys. I mean, it's prime time beer festivals, and so you guys are this weekend.
This weekend, Friday night, Studio Square, 7 to 11, band Stolen Roads from Northern New Jersey will be there.
And will you guys have other festivals coming up?
We do. We're going to announce something shortly for the fall.
So how can people keep in touch with you?
Well, if you go to fiveboroughcraftbeerfest.com, you can get a hold. You can find out about this weekend, all our sponsors and the actual breweries that are going to be there. We have all breweries from the five boroughs, including Staten Island, the Forgotten Borough. And we're looking forward to it.
Well, welcome to New York, guys.
And all proceeds go to Grow NYC.
All right, yes. That's awesome. Okay, now, Justin, so and everyone says, oh, I have a fest, which is what's awesome about beer. So, Justin, you, the hop grower, you have a festival too?
We do. Last year, we had our first inaugural Hoptember event, which was September 14th. We'll have our second one this year. It's going to be September 13th. And what we do is we like to really showcase our Hudson Valley brewers. And last year we had 18 breweries. This year we're...
Where is it? Is it the Garden
Center?
It's
actually right at our farm, right at the hop farm. So we limit it to 1,000 tickets. It's all inclusive, food and drink. So, you know, unlimited tastings.
And then do you guys have a website?
We do. You could check us out on DutchessHops.com. And you could get tickets. We'll probably start selling tickets next month, actually.
All right. And Jen, with NRDC, you're doing something special with beer.
Exactly. On May 8th, we have an NRDC farm-to-table dinner. It's in the East Village at a local community garden. And Kelly Taylor has been generous enough to donate all of our beer. So join us. You can go to NRDC.org to get information on the May 8th event.
And I'm going to give a shout-out to our buddy Steve Hindy with his book Craft Beer Revolution. This Friday night, if you're in New York City, go to the New York Public Library. You can buy tickets online. I bet through brooklynbrewery.com you can get it, but that's going to be a cool event. He's got Kim Jordan, who's the co-founder of New Belgium, coming in as well. It's going to be a pretty awesome book event. And Paul Leon from New York State Beer, you guys are taking over. You're doing festivals, and you got Saratoga Beer Week and all this stuff.
Our festivals are really New York State-oriented, so the next festival we've got coming, we've labeled them Craft New York Beer Fests. The next one's actually at Brooklyn Brewery on June 5th, which is going to be a rare beer tasting with New York State craft beers. Kelly Taylor will be taking part in that, along with 24 other New York State breweries from around the state. And then with Rochester, August 22nd, and Syracuse, November 22nd. And then and we've got a really great partnership now with the New York City Brewers Guild. And so next year's New York City Beer Week will have a strong New York State element to it, you know, farm brewing element.
That's awesome. That, so. And I'll say, keep up with the news. You got goodbeerseal.com and heritageradionetwork.org. There's a lot of events going on. In fact, too many, but that's what's great about New York City. There's three things tonight I could go to and still not go to everything. A couple shout-outs. Our regular guest and good buddy, John LaPolia, owns Bitter and Esther's. It's probably the coolest beer shop in Brooklyn because he mostly teaches you how to make beer. And he teaches things like, if you really want to make beer, it sounds kind of like fun, but actually there's a lot of cleaning and a lot of hands-on work. So it's good if you're thinking about being a brewer, check out Bitter and Esther's. And John LaPolia will tell you that it's 3 hours of cleaning as well as making beer, because I went last year and I decided that I would never own a brewery. But May 3rd is Bitter and Esther's homebrewing author, John Palmer. There's a homebrewing author. I didn't know this. He'll do a signing and a talk, 1 to 4 p.m. And Sunday, May 4th, John Palmer will visit Finback Brewing in Queens, one of the newest breweries, from 12 to 4 for the American Homebrewers Association Rally. And that night, John Palmer will be at 508 Gastro Brewery for a free event from 6 to 9. So I think the best way to find information about this, Maggie, is to check out a site. Which one is that? I'd love to know. Maggie, jump in, tell us, because this is important. John Palmer is a big homebrewing author, and I think on goodbrewseal.com you can find out more. And it's important to visit to New York. And again, John LaPolia, go to Bitters and Esters, check them out. He's really pushing this visit. And I have to say, all the things we talked about, you know, grains and hops and the scene, it's still the core of the craft beer is the home brewers. And really, you know, I know for Kelly, like people ask him, oh, I need a brewer. Kelly that's how Chris Kuzmin got the job at Five Wake Gastro Brewery. There's a lot of home brewers ready to graduate. But I think we're talking about John Lepoli right now. So
yeah, I got a lot of brewers from the home brewer community out here. You know, you got to put it out there, and then you get 100 people banging on the door and say, "I want to get into the brewing industry." And it's really important for me to get somebody that knows the product, knows the backbone of the product, and has the passion to be able to brew it in their New York City apartment. That speaks a lot to me, so I'm always interested in talking to but a lot of them show up to the interview without a bottle of beer. and I tell them, I was like, listen, okay, not for nothing, no matter what happens here, next beer interview you go on, bring a six pack.
I brought Two-Hearted, by the way.
Yeah, okay, yeah, it's important.
Right, and now, talk about events, this is kind of a fun wrap-up. We've covered so many bases, we will go deeper. This whole regional grains thing is going to only go deeper. And also next year for New York City Beer Week, we're going to do so much more with New York grains and New York City Brewers Choice. It's going to be awesome. Yep. And hops, too. There's so much going on. Again, it's Ag and Beer Show. There's so much to talk about. But we have another calling guest. We just finished Lent. And a couple years ago, there was a writer who lived for 43 days on his homebrew alone. Well, another guy did it. And he's calling in, and let me see what his name is, because I was following him, but it's kind of amazing, right? It's like I could live on – I couldn't live on beer alone because I would have like some vegetables and, you know, like a life
problem. I think I read this.
Come on, you guys too.
This was the journalist, right?
This is the fun part. So his name is Chris Schreier. He's the Liquid Lent champion. He is also a Toronto-based beer blogger at torontobeerblog.com. And every once in a while I would go on and say, oh, let's hashtag Liquid Lent. So, Chris, are you on the air?
Yeah, man, I'm here. How you guys doing?
Dude, thanks for listening. You're part of an intense show today. We're talking about all things beer, but give us a quick synopsis. Why did you do you lived on what, 40 days or 43 days?
Yeah, I did 40, yeah.
40 days on beer alone. Give us a little quick brief about that.
All right, so the deal was, like you say, Jay, I think his name was Wilson, did it a couple years ago and kind of inspired me to give it a try. And I kind of went at it with two different things in mind. One was very public, which was to try and engage people in discussion about fasting. And whether you're, you know, a spiritual person, Christian person, or whatever or not, there's a lot of, like, life lesson application you can gain from fasting. Now, maybe not 40 days off of food, but, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. And so it was really cool to be able to engage people and talk about that. And then personally, with that in mind, it was quite a bit of a spiritual discipline for me doing that. So I'm a faithful dude, and it was part of my progress, part of my journey.
Awesome. And what beers did you drink?
Well, my main beer was a beer that I made at Amsterdam Brewing Company, which is a brewery up here in Toronto. And one of my good friends is the brewmaster there. So I showed up and stirred when they told me to. They have a really nice one-heck Blickman.
That's how I make beer, too. But what style of beer was it, though? Was there any special style, or was this different beers?
Yep. It was a Doppelbock we made. And we bumped up the grain bill with oatmeal. The original intent was to have it running at about, I think it was about 10 or 11% oatmeal in the mash. But we kind of screwed up and added a bit too much, which was sort of my fault. And so we're guessing it was actually closer to about 20% of the grain bill was actually flaked oats. So it was thick. It was like carbonated cough syrup. But it had a lot of calorie and a lot of protein, so it kept me alive.
So nutrition-wise, that's all you lived on for 40 days?
I also would drink a bit of juice and coffee and tea between meal beers, as it were. And then I drank some other beer during the time, too, just whatever I kind of felt like.
We're here with Kelly Taylor, one of our New York City brewers. Kelly, did you ever think about living exclusively on beer? Do you think there's nutritional elements to beer?
I always think about living exclusively on beer. Why wouldn't you? You know, I've got beer coming out of my ears almost. And actually, I read, there was somebody wrote an article. There was an author from the Midwest that did an article about this, and they did the 40-day thing and beer and water, and they did double box. And I got a bunch of people together, and we were talking about doing just a beer for Lent thing. I was thinking I might go the other direction because the beer doesn't have a lot of protein. It doesn't have a lot of protein to it, so you need to supplement that somehow. And I guess adding a lot of flaked product would do the trick, especially if it's not highly fermentable, so you get a lot of the proteins carry through.
So you can still get proteins from
Yeah,
grains.
I was kind of thinking about adding, like, protein powder or something. You know, like, pardon?
I said, your emmer will be high in protein.
Yeah,
so there goes June is right.
There goes June with the emmer again.
So
here's the thing
Change
I thought.
Change the grain bill.
Is like I might be able, exactly. instead of doing like something, some other thing, just do beer, bread, and cheese. Do like a monk's diet kind of thing, you know, and get your protein from the cheese and just do, you know, just something very,
well, you
very
know,
simple.
Chris, it's so
you know,
funny.
Everybody's
you're on the right
fasting,
show because we're talking about grains, and June Russell just said that by changing the grains in the beer, You could alter the nutrition, right? Possibly.
Well, I don't know if I could say that.
Emmer, stay on focus.
I don't know what happens in the process of brewing to the proteins in the beer, but yeah, it's definitely a high protein grain. And so it's one of the things that we're interested in growing it out as a food grain in the future to, you know, as we all have to move away from gigantic meat consumption that yeah. we're
on. We have to plant-based diets.
But you know, beer's got all the essential amino acids and some non-essential amino acids. So it's an incredibly healthy beverage except for the alcohol component.
There's this gluten-free thing. I'm not into that, but I'd much rather drink my grains. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Carl,
yeah.
From New York State, what's your position on beer as a nutritional? Beer is a good thing. I think it's a good thing if it's craft brewed, it's made from, you know, good ingredients. Is there an official position on this?
Beer is good is in moderation at any level. Yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean, yeah. Beer brings happiness to the world.
Well, and we're going back. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier about balance. You know, balance in the ecosystem, balance in the farming, balance in the community, and you know, beer for Lent. You know, Lent isn't about balance, is it? You know, Lent is about kind of giving up your balance, I guess. I don't know.
Sacrifice.
Losing your balance. If you drink beer for Lent, you lost balance.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the monks had it down right. I think they had a simple diet, and they supplemented it with beer. I think the beer is what gave them their spiritual...
It was a loophole.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was their loophole.
All right,
yeah.
Justin, our hop grower guy, what's your comment on drinking beer for Lent and... The nutritional benefits of beer.
It's like, as long as it's IPAs, it's good, right?
Sure. You know what? If you add a lot of hops, I think you're all right.
All the polyphenols.
It's good. Right? I think this is a very interesting idea. And if you know, I'd like to see a study done on the different grains, in terms of the proteins. I mean, hey, you know, I gave up sweets. I didn't give up beer.
Well, the one
and definitely in Christ time, they probably were drinking emmer beer, because that was the one of the grains that was being grown at that time in that part of the world. And,
even better,
yeah, and everything, you know, will ferment and have its place. And so
I'm into this conversation. You know, it's like whether it's
what would Christ drink?
Yeah, or exactly. You know, a broth. You know, we're talking beer. So, Jen from NRDC.
Well, you know,
the last word.
If you talk about public health too, you want to talk about what's grown locally, what's seasonal, what's most digestible, and that's what we have locally around us. So it's a very natural sort of next step to say that this should be a supplement or at least a primary addition to our diet.
Well, I think that, I mean, let's have a little perspective here, because it has not been that long through human history that we've had the luxury to just, you know, mail order whatever we want. Like, you make do with whatever you have. And that's where all of these things have evolved. And so, you know, we didn't have the choice 200 years ago, 300, 400 years ago, when, you know, colonial days, it's like they brewed what they had, period. So this system of agriculture that we have is new and probably not long for the world, because it's not sustainable.
Chris in Toronto, you want to have the final word on this? Chris?
What? Yeah.
Did you hear what we said? I don't know if you can on the phone.
Yeah, I did. I just didn't get to that last question there. I was going to say, my thing actually in terms of the beer and the nutrition and supplementing and all, the one thing that actually most people leave out of the equation is the lack of fat in your diet, which, funny enough, my doctor, who you would expect to bring this up, was the one who brought it up. But the biggest problem with any amount of, you know, just focusing on beer, and I almost say this as a disclaimer, you know, kids, if you're listening at home, you do need fat in your diet, apparently. And I was getting to the point where cognitive issues were about to start coming up.
Yeah, so, well, how hard was this, Chris? How hard was this to do?
Oh, it was difficult. It really was. I love the challenges. Food, and I would still cook for my family and stuff.
Ooh,
so,
ouch.
Yeah, I've got this idea now that I kind of knew in my mind, but I hadn't really put into practice, which is like when you read, if you know, reading Bible stories is your game, you know, when you read about famous good big people in the Bible, they would go through these periods where they would have some miraculous sort of divine, you know, thunderbolts and lightning kind of intervention. But for the most part, they were people who were good and important because they just did a lot of hard work. And I think I went into the fast kind of expecting some, like, angel's wings. And what I actually got was, like, you know, marching boots, and I just had to slog through. And it was difficult, but it was a really positive experience.
Did you lose weight or gain weight?
I lost. I didn't actually weigh myself, so I don't know the exact amount, but I lost about 6 centimeters off my waist, which I guess in inches is like.
We're Americans.
3 inches.
I totally don't know. What
yeah, what is that?
I think it's like 3 inches. 3.5 inches.
Let's close it. I would say, Chris, thanks so much for doing this. I would say this, that I've actually, because of you and the Wilson dude, I did a little research on this. I think that the typical monk's diet during Lent did include some fish and poultry. I don't think that any monks ever lived exclusively on beer. I love that you guys did it. But I'm saying that I think that beer does supplement, you know, your diet. And I think that with the proper grains and locally made beer, it can be an important part of your diet. I think if you add a little eggs, fish, and chicken, you'd probably get all the fats and everything you needed. So thanks for calling in, Chris. We're gonna sign off. Let's just give thanks to everybody. This is an awesome, awesome show with so much more stories to cover from Dutchess County Hop Growers, NRDC, new beer festivals in Queens, a great brewer in Brooklyn, regional grains and Grow NYC, and our New York State Brewers Association. So thanks, everybody, for coming on the show tonight. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com. Felt to bring this podcast to you tonight. So thanks to everybody in the room, and thanks for joining me here on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks again to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and our engineer-producer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Thank you, Jimmy Carboni.
Buddy!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.